You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Alexei Navalny died in prison last week, where he was serving a 30-year sentence. Navalny was the leading opposition figure to Russian President Vladimir Putin, who has since jailed over 150 people for commemorating Navalny's death. The reactions of political leaders in the U.S. have been reflective of a growing divide between liberals and conservatives on Russia and the U.S. role as an ally to Ukraine and to NATO countries. We're talking about Russia, U.S. politics, and the death of opposition leader Alexei Navalny, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on U.S. policy toward Russia as we head into this presidential election? Is this something you're thinking about as we head into this election? Do you have questions about Russian internal politics after the death of Alexei Navalny? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Yoshiko Herrera is professor of political science at UW-Madison. She's an expert on Russian politics and U.S.-Russia relations. Yoshiko, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
First, can you tell us a little bit about Alexei Navalny and his role as a leader of opposition to Vladimir Putin's government?
Yes, sure. He started out as a real estate attorney and was investigating corruption in the Russian government in the early 2000s. And from that, he became a little bit more active as an opposition politician. He was known to have a good sense of humor and to be sort of charming and charismatic. And he was actually targeted by the Russian government and twice charged with embezzlement, you know, which is ironic because that's exactly the kind of thing he was investigating the government for. He received suspended sentences, and he ran for mayor, actually, of Moscow. And most notably for most people, he was poisoned in August 2020 with Novichok, and largely that's seen as by the Russian government. There's a movie about it called Navalny. And after he recovered, he went back to Russia in 2021, refusing to leave the country and wanting to change the regime for the better, and he was immediately detained upon his return in 2021, January, and he most recently was in solitary confinement in a penal colony in the Arctic Circle, and he died in custody there.
And died in custody. There are rumors, claims that he was murdered. There was direct foul play. Or the other argument is he was in these horrific conditions in prison that ultimately killed him. What do we know about his death at this point?
Well, I think there's no question there was, quote, foul play. I mean, he was imprisoned wrongly and held in very difficult conditions. And we know that he was a threat to the regime. So I don't actually think there's any, I mean, we could debate whether the regime, quote, killed him or not, but I would say he was killed by the regime one way or another. He had recently appeared on video just a few days before his death, and he seemed sort of fine. So it didn't look like he was suffering from an observable health condition. And so I think it's fair to say that the regime killed him.
What's been the reaction in Russia to his death?
Well, many people have gone out to put flowers or commemorate victims of Soviet gulag. Over the weekend, the government arrested over 400 people for doing things like that. There are, you know, I think his death is sort of shocking, even though people know the Putin regime is capable of cruelty and extreme brutality and violence. It was still a shock. Somehow that they had killed him. His mother has traveled to where he was held and has appealed for his body to be released. His body is kept somewhere in a morgue and not available to his family for a burial or for viewing. So I think that within Russia, of course, the Putin supporters maybe thought that they were helping their cause by finally getting rid of him, but I think there is a fair amount of backlash internationally and to some extent within Russia as well.
I want to listen to some of that backlash here from President Biden reacting to the news, saying he was outraged but not surprised. Here's a listen.
Make no mistake. Putin is responsible for Navalny's death. Putin is responsible. What has happened in Navalny is yet more proof of Putin's brutality. No one should be fooled, not in Russia, not at home, not anywhere in the world.
We've heard reports of some new sanctions coming now from the Biden administration in response to Navalny's death. Does his death affect U.S.-Russia relations that much, or does it kind of confirm where we already were?
Well, U.S.-Russia relations are in a sort of precarious point right now because the number one thing that we can do to weaken Russia and weaken their capacity for violence is to support Ukraine. And as you and your listeners probably know, the Ukraine-Israel and humanitarian funding bill is currently held up in the House. So I think that it's possible that the death of Navalny will crystallize for people the threat that Russia poses to its own people and internationally, and it may loosen some of the political resistance that's been holding up the support for Ukraine. So I think that yes, there. What more can we do against Russia? We know that the sanctions, which are comprehensive, there are some leaks and some things, further things that could be done. So I think that for sure we should be doing those things anyways. Navalny's death might spark a bit more of that.
We've seen a split in the Republican Party in a recent Senate vote, for example, on that Ukraine aid. You mentioned a Republican split more or less down the middle in the ultimately successful vote in the Senate. Former President Trump responded to Navalny's death, didn't mention Putin at all. Here, Trump wrote on Truth Social, quote, "Sudden death of Alexei Navalny has made me more and more aware of what is happening in our country. It is a slow, steady progression with crooked, radical left politicians, prosecutors, and judges leading us down a path to destruction." His GOP rival in the presidential race, Nikki Haley, called Trump weak in the knees for that response and not for directly confronting Putin. Can you talk about what you see in Republican politics surrounding Navalny's death and attitudes toward Russia?
Yes, I think the first thing is that there's bipartisan support in America by wide margins against Russia and in favor of Ukraine. Most Americans understand that Putin is a brutal dictator and they do not support him. There's only a couple of exceptions, prominent exceptions in America, of people who support Putin, and that's Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson. And I think something that a lot of Republican representatives in Congress and in the Senate are realizing is that that position, that pro-Putin, pro-dictator position, is not actually popular with the American people. And so I think one of the problems that the Republican Party faces is that to the extent that they want to stick with Trump, they're going to have to confront an electorate that largely does not support dictatorship and killing of political prisoners and the brutality that is unfolding in Ukraine.
Yoshiko Herrera is with us from UW-Madison, professor of political science and expert on Russian politics, U.S.-Russian relations. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about Russia, Ukraine, and the U.S. after the death of Alexei Navalny, longtime critic of Vladimir Putin. Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Mark, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. You know, this whole incident with Navalny and a series of people before him that Putin has eliminated, I think really speaks to just who the Russian people right now are in back of. And for one party in this country, led by, you know, a potential candidate for that party for the presidency, just scares the daylights out of me. Because if you think for a minute that this country can go alone against the likes of China or Russia, if and when they decide, you know, it's all right to do that, because we no longer, you know, are allied with our friends in Western Europe, I think people who feel that way ought to think about very long and hard about where their children and grandchildren are going to have to draw a line in the sand to make sure that this country stays free.
Thanks for the call, Mark. And Mark mentioned America's relations with Western Europe and NATO allies. Can you talk a little bit about that part of the story, how the U.S. has cooperated or not with NATO when it comes to confronting Russia?
Yes. Well, one of the shocking things last week was Donald Trump saying that he would not support a NATO ally, not only would not support a NATO ally, was attacked by Russia, but that he would encourage Russia to do whatever it wanted with that country. And this is a clear break in terms of U.S. European relations and U.S. support of NATO countries. I mean, we are in a firm alliance with NATO, and we have been since the end of World War II. And so it's just it's almost hard to imagine the United States not supporting a NATO ally. Moreover, Russia has made very clear that they are not just at war with Ukraine, but they are at war with the West. Putin, in his interview with Tucker Carlson, spoke at length about the expansiveness of the Russian world, of the Russian Empire. He mentioned Poland numerous times. And I think it's quite worrying that he didn't suggest in any way that there were any boundaries to his view of where Russia should end. So I think that there is just no question that Russia poses a major threat to the United States and to Europe. And we need to be very prepared for what would happen if Russia were to prevail in Ukraine. I think there's little doubt that Putin would be emboldened by that and attempt to go further.
Thanks for that call. Yoshiko Herrera is with us, professor of political science at UW-Madison, talking with us about U.S.-Russia relations in the wake of opposition leader Alexei Navalny's death in prison in Russia. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions. And what do you make of former President Donald Trump, his competitor Nikki Haley, and President Biden's various opinion statements when it comes to Russia, Ukraine, and the death of Alexei Navalny? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison political science professor and Russia expert Yoshiko Herrera, looking at U.S. politics and the response to the death of opposition leader Alexei Navalny in Russia. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls with Carolyn in Milwaukee. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. My main thing is I don't understand. I'm older, and so I was around during Eisenhower's time and before that, and I don't understand what's happened to the Republican Party. And I also, but you kind of answered that, but I also want to know how strong this movement is in Russia, the people that are standing up, how are there a lot of people who are just not brave enough to stand up? And the people who do are so brave. I just feel that they're wonderful people, that they're standing up to this dictator. And I wondered how strong that movement is, too.
Carolyn, thanks for the call. Yoshiko, how strong is opposition to Putin, and how willing are people to risk literally everything?
Well, it's a very good question. And Putin has really cracked down on the country, especially in the last few years, but in particular since 2022. He is arresting high school kids for Facebook posts. There was just an arrest of a joint Russian-American citizen yesterday in Yekaterinburg, who had gone to a pro-Ukrainian rally in Los Angeles. And then she had gone back to Russia, and she was just arrested. Somebody like Alexei Navalny is a little bit unusual in that he was literally not only willing to give his life, but he was just very brave in the face of threats from Putin. And he tried to encourage people to stand up. In his, at the end of the Navalny movie that was made about him, he says to people, if only 10% of us would stand up to the regime, the regime would not last because they can't arrest all of us. And he just appealed to people to be strong, to not give up, to keep fighting against the regime. But it's very, very hard when you're facing jail or death, and the regime's message to individuals is to say, don't bother, it won't work. No one cares what you think. No one cares what you're going to do. And you have no choices. You have no option. So it's a very, very hard situation, and it takes a lot of bravery and courage to risk arrest and stand up to that. And of course, there are a number of opposition leaders, prominent ones, that are in jail, but there's also ordinary people who've been jailed who are sort of suffering without many people even knowing about it. So it's a very tough situation.
Thanks for the call, Carolyn. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Well, good afternoon. I cringe when I hear media or educators talk about Russia is our enemy, et cetera. I think there's a big difference between the Russian government and the Russian people. I think eventually Putin will be gone and the Russian people will be liberated. And that's what I look for. But I think it's disingenuous for the media to show this outcry for Navalny when he was alive. They didn't really fight for his freedom. They didn't really tell us the truth of what he had to do. And I'm concerned about this journalist with, I think it's Wall Street Journal, who's being held in Russia. And, you know, when are we going to hear the truth? Putin said in the Tucker Carlson interview that he was guilty of receiving secret information in a covert manner. So when are we going to hear the truth?
Jeff, thanks for the call. Referring there to Evan Gershkovich from the Wall Street Journal. Yoshiko, I mean, have you seen outcry prior to Navalny's death about the treatment of Navalny and journalists like Evan Gershkovich?
Yes. And let me just say, I would not consider myself anti-Russian people. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly anti-Putin, but I lived in Russia for 2.5 years in the 90s. I know a lot of Russian people, but this is a dictatorial regime. And in a dictatorial regime, the people actually literally do not have a voice, are not able to stand up. And those that do are punished, like Navalny. So I think that the truth is that Putin is a brutal dictator, and the Russian people, that there, you know, there are some people that are supporting him. Let's be clear about that. But there are a lot of people who are not. And those people currently are facing a lot of repression. Evan Gershkovich is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal who was arrested by Putin, and they have made up charges against him. But he is being detained unfairly. He should be released immediately. And of course, I think the Biden administration and others are working for his release. I hope that Tucker Carlson would use his contacts to try to get him released. But the detaining of American citizens or anyone who's a journalist or anybody who just is speaking their mind is something we should condemn, and we should work towards getting all political prisoners freed. And people have been working on that, but we don't have a lot of leverage over the Putin regime.
Thanks for the call. Andy is with us now in Appleton. Andy, hi.
Hi, I love conspiracy theories. So the fact that Donald Trump met with Vladimir Putin 5 times, and there's not one record of any of the conversations that took place from him, raises a red flag suspicion with me, as well as Rand Paul and our local Ron Johnson have never been critical of what I would consider America's enemy. Also raises suspicion that there's a lot of infiltration from Russia to influence American politics.
Andy, thanks for the call. Now, Ron Johnson said, I've got this in front of me from the AP, on the Senate floor, he said last week, quote, "I don't like this reality. Vladimir Putin is an evil war criminal." But he went on, "Vladimir Putin will not lose this war." So I want to talk about that element of this, Yoshiko. Somebody like Senator Johnson, who said on this show, he doesn't think spending more money on Ukraine's behalf is worth it because they've, in effect, already lost. And that's one of the arguments we've seen in Congress against further funding for Ukraine, even for people who don't support or say they don't support Putin. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think that's wrong. I think the Ukrainians are absolutely begging us for ammunition and for supplies. And in the West, in the United States and in NATO countries, we have those supplies. Our defense industries here are capable of producing the armaments and ammunition that Ukraine needs. So the idea that the West, that NATO and the U.S. in backing Ukraine cannot win is just, I think that is false. I don't think very many military analysts at all think that Russia would prevail against Ukraine with backing from the West. So no, Ukraine has not already lost. They've lost about 20% of their territory is currently occupied by Russia, but the capital stands. Ukrainian people are very motivated to maintain their sovereignty and their nationhood because they see the atrocities and war crimes committed in Russian areas. So no, Ukraine is not lost, and they can win with our support. And if we want to weaken Putin, we need to support Ukraine. The worst thing for the West and for Ukraine and for the United States would be a Putin victory in Ukraine.
Thanks for that call. In just our last minute, one more news story cropped up. Yoshiko, some members of Congress raised alarm about a potential national security threat. It emerged they had been briefed or were about to be briefed about Russian plans to try to develop nuclear weapons to use in orbit. Still trying to pin down exactly what is going on there. How alarming is that story? Or are we getting out ahead of ourselves? This is something they might be planning and is not imminent.
Well, I actually think this connects a little bit to the first part of the previous caller's question, in that one of the ways that Russia is battling the West is through massive disinformation campaigns. And one of the things that they try to do is exploit fears that they think have some seed or basis in the West, and to make more of that. So one of the concerns about supporting Ukraine is nuclear escalation. And so, lo and behold, now we hear from Russia, they're going to come up with a new nuclear weapon in space. So now maybe they are close to it, but I think it's also consistent with their manipulative media attempts to put that story out there.
Yoshiko, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Yoshiko Herrera, professor of political science at UW-Madison, an expert on Russian politics and U.S.-Russian relations. She talked to us about the death of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny and the response here across various parties here in the United States to that death. You can keep sharing your thoughts on the issue. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Join Wisconsin Public Radio Thursday morning for live special coverage of the State of the Tribes Address. This year's address starts around 10 o'clock in the morning at the Wisconsin State Capitol. We'll hear from James Crawford, who's chairman of the Forest County Potawatomi. It's live special coverage of the 2024 State of the Tribes Address. Again, that's around 10 a.m. on Thursday. You can listen live here on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. And, of course, you can go to WPR.org if you miss it. Check it out in archive form and check out the morning show for some more about the State of the Tribes Address.